This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike DeTeo along with Charlie Long behind the glass here in studio. Steve Geller will join us a little bit later in the 5 o'clock hour. I want to tell everybody at 420, we'll have Wade Roos on from Golden Meadow, Louisiana. He's now the president of McNeese State. Join us to talk about, and what a wild ride for the Cowboys and winning their first ever game at tournament time in the 64 region. Got bounced out Saturday, but were able to win that first game Thursday afternoon against Clemson, and the impact of sports on schools itself. And so I thought Wade would be a good person to talk about that. Also, they in the search for a new head coach in basketball, since Will Wade took the job officially over the weekend at North Carolina State. At 4:35, man, I'm running one hour ahead of time. Matt Miller from ESPN, talk NFL draft with us, and have a lot to discuss as the draft is actually 1 month away today. Charlie, the Saints had a couple signings today. Google Amadi, who has been with the team 2023, has played nickel dime sets, played on special teams, so he brings a lot of versatility to the table in playing cornerback, but also has played in the nickel, has played in dime coverages, and so you bring in a guy that has played a lot of different positions here on this football team. And then Dylan Radins. And Dylan was a guy I scouted quite a bit at North Dakota State. He's from Minnesota, actually played more defense in high school than he played on offense, and transitioned to being an offensive tackle. Played primarily on the left side for North Dakota State. Got invited to the Senior Bowl, really put on a good performance there. And ended up being a second-round pick of the Tennessee Titans. They found out real quick he had average athletic skills. And when he gets beat, if it's pass blocking or run blocking, it's because somebody outspeeded him, outquicknessed him right off the bat. He's a power player, real physical at the point of attack. He's much better inside. Most likely he will play that left guard position for the Saints, but a guy that is a tough guy inside, very physical, has been known more for his run-blocking skills than as a pass protector. And again, when he gets beat, if it's as a pass protector or a run blocker, Charlie, is because he's got outspeeded and doesn't get his hands on that defender quick enough.
Still think the Saints need to draft offensive line, Mike.
This gives you a depth piece.
Yeah, I agree.
And maybe he's the guy you turn to if you have an injury, but you still looking to upgrade the offensive line. Dylan Radins, or no Dylan Radins, you signed.
The Titans' offensive line last year,
it was bad.
It was rough.
The last couple years has been bad.
That is true as well, and they've tried to address it in the draft as well, spending those top 10 picks on like Peter Skoronski, most recently like J.C. Latham. We'll see if they'll be back in the market.
They're going to have to move J.C.
I think they are. I think that's the
He's got to play right tackle. I don't get the putting him at left. It just didn't seem right. He didn't quite have the quickness or the speed element, and we're talking about almost the same sort of situation with Radins. He playing on that left side, and he was playing left tackle. Man, and he got beat big time there. And so I think he's much better on the right side where he can use his girth. And he is a wide load man. He's built like a double wide freezer. I mean, that's how wide he is. And he's a pretty good athlete for that big. But it's his ability to come out that stance quick enough. And when you play tackle, you better get out of that stance quick. And so they got some doings along that offensive line for the Titans also, whoever's going to play quarterback there.
Yeah, and it's likely going to be Cam Ward, but we'll see.
I think as we get closer, and we'll talk to Matt about it, as it gets closer and closer, the more of the drumbeat is that they have circled the wagons on Cam Ward, and you got a big hole at quarterback. And if you don't figure that out, everything else, you like the dog chasing the car, okay? You get right up to it, but what you going to do when you catch it? You don't have a quarterback there. And they thought maybe Will Levis could be that guy. Did not turn out to be. They rolled for a while with Ryan Tannehill. But, you know, it comes to a point where you say, enough's enough, we got to move on. With Tannehill, he would flash it, and then at times he'd put a ball out there. You say, man, who are you throwing the football to?
Right.
Remember the AFC wild card game when they played against Cincinnati, and he threw up a couple lollipops.
He threw three interceptions. I mean, that was a game where Tennessee's defensive line
they
had
were
nine
unreal.
Sacks against Joe Burrow, and they still couldn't win that game because of how bad the quarterback play was. And, I mean, the quarterback play really hasn't taken a significant step with Will Levis like they were hoping. And I remember Justin Mello of the Draft Network told us this, Mike, that they just can't sell Levis for another year in Tennessee. So all the people, and I've seen it kind of on social media today that, yes, the Saints are going to Miami's Pro Day. Oh, the interest in Cam Ward. It just feels like Tennessee is maybe just going to stay put, right, and use the number one overall pick and draft their quarterback of the future and take Cam Ward. I have a hard time believing that they'll trade back from that first overall selection.
It better be a godfather deal.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, if you're trying to move up to get that, you're going to have to overpay significantly to get from 9-1 and get your quarterback. So I just don't see it happening. But
and I think they're sending 10 people. I think the Saints are sending 9.
Yeah.
The Titans are sending 10, and I think they had supper with him last night in entertaining Cam Ward. So you can see the interest there. And also, too, they have an owner that she wants all this fixed because they're building a new multi-billion-dollar stadium in Nashville, and you can't sell that. New stadium or not, you better have the quarterback issue settled up. Also, we want to congratulate Jay Clark and the LSU gymnastics team. Back-to-back SEC championships. And so Coach Clark and the Lady Tigers just done a great job. And again, back-to-back SEC championships for them. And at 5 o'clock, Charlie, Kim Mulkey and the Lady Tigers, they play Florida State. Man, they took out the belt and spanked the backside of San Diego State 103-48. But then when you look at Florida State, they beat George Mason 94-59. So it was two big beatdowns by both teams. And that game starts at 5 o'clock in the PMAC.
Yeah, as far as, you know, chalk in March Madness, it's bad in the men's game right now, but it is really, really bad in the women's game right now. All the first round matchups felt like 20-plus, 30-plus, 40-plus point blowouts, especially with those top teams involved. And, you know, if you're looking at this matchup tonight, the winner moves on to play NC State, who's a 2-seed. NC State beat Michigan State in their matchup, the 2-7 matchup, and now they're in the Sweet 16. So LSU and Florida State with a spot in the Sweet 16 on the line tonight. As you mentioned, tip-off is at 5 p.m., and we'll share updates during Sports Talk.
You know, and Coach Mulkey was on with me last Thursday, and one of the things she emphasized was, you know, give them one shot, and that's it. Occasionally, the ball might not bounce your way, and somebody gets a second shot at it, but she thought that was key. Defense travels this time of year, and also second opportunities, trying to limit that. When we come back, we'll have on with us the president of McNeese State University, Wade Roos, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dettelier along with Charlie Long behind the glass here, coordinating and supervising everything on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line from Lake Charles, the president of McNeese State, Wade Roos. Wade, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon, and man, happy birthday.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you so much for having us on here. It's good to It's good to every once in a while reconnect with an old Bayou Lafourche connection, so we're glad to be on.
Thanks so much. Kind of tell everybody a little bit. I know CBS on their broadcast Saturday was talking about you had sort of come up with an economic figure for what it meant to get all this publicity for McNeese to make it to the 64. Then you win a game Thursday, and, man, I'm trying to do a show with Coach Mulkey, and the game's playing and ending, and I'm getting all these texts. But, you know, my mind is concentrated on you know, questioning Coach Mulkey. And then I can't tell you how many people, you know, text me about, man, what a great game and what it does for the state of Louisiana and for McNeese.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an honor to be back in our great state. As you know, I left and I was an economist at the Federal Reserve in Chicago for quite some time. Then was Arizona. I was away for 20-something-odd years. I had the opportunity to come play a part back in the great state of Louisiana in higher education, and came back and realized that we have had some disinvestment and we need to start thinking creatively. So 2 years ago, or 2.5 years ago now, I was named executive vice president and athletics come and meet me. And as we started developing a strategic plan, the idea was, okay, how do we – you know, again, I probably think too much like an economist, but how do we quantify and make sure that our actions are truly going to drive outcomes? So we started tracking and investing in basketball 2 years ago. And then last year we saw when we made the tournament, we have a what we call advertising equivalency. And it's an algorithm that basically tells us, okay, if you would have to pay to get this many eyeballs on a McNeese logo every time the word McNeese is mentioned, if we had to buy some sort of advertising campaign, they give you an equivalent of that. And the way we figured we could leverage that was through athletics. So actually the UL system now bought the algorithm and is kind of using it throughout all 9 institutions. But for us, over a 7-day period that we ended this morning, we stopped calculating it this morning, we had an $84.7 million advertising equivalency. Obviously, my advertising budget's about $250,000. So
I was going to say, who's cutting that $84 million check?
Yeah, so that's a big – no, it's not an $84 million check. But the way we think about it and how does that become outcomes is we track it to our webpage, right? So we think, okay, if we can get people onto our webpage and if they're actually going to click on what we define as meaningful clicks, which is either about us or apply now, those are the two hot buttons on our webpage, then we say, okay, they're really digging and maybe that can drive enrollment. Given the current structure of higher education, enrollment's where your revenue's at, and our motto and our methodology last year, we flipped enrollment. We were up 3% in the fall for the first time in 15 years. I gave a lot of credit to that because of our run, you know, because of this process and this intentional plan that we put in place last year. We were up 3.6% or 7% in the spring. That was the first time in 15 years. And currently, our applications for the fall are up over 10%. For us to be able to capture this exposure and this enormous amount of advertising equivalency, then we have to see come all the way to enrollment. And we're pretty optimistic when you see the application numbers truly elevating on a daily basis throughout the last 7 days. So we're pretty optimistic that when it's all said and done, we can develop a model that truly shows causation, not just association, in terms of an economist talk that our actions and our plan that put in place had a causal relationship to drive enrollment. And that's what it's all about for us because that's where the revenue's at.
Wait, I had this conversation with Tim Rebo, and I've always felt McNeese in the state of Louisiana was the sleeping giant. That, I mean, you sit right on the border, so to speak, where you pulling, you know, people that go to McNeese, not only from Louisiana, but you're a stone's throw away from Texas. And so, man, we can talk about from a sports standpoint, that's big, but also from a student standpoint that you're pulling from both states here. And I've always felt that the McNeese Cowboys and McNeese State University, they were the sleeping giant. If there was one in the state of Louisiana, it's there because of where you located.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And it's funny you say that. We just put in a strategic plan in place where it says, You know, we want to be the premier. I mean, our vision is to be the premier regional university in all of Louisiana and Southeast Texas. So we realize that's our service area, and we want to be the best there is in all of that. And our, you know, our mission is to provide a life-changing higher educational experience. So I could not agree with you more. We're positioned geographically in an area that is also economically pretty vibrant. I mean, if you take the five parish area in Southwest Louisiana, you can't go get five other parishes, no matter how you put them together, that has better GDP growth in the last 3 or 4 years. Now, a lot of that is because of the capital injection from our LNG industry, but, I mean, that goes all the way into our university, and how do we develop to make sure we continue to develop talent for that industry. So to your point, yeah, we're sort of blessed with being in a hot economic part of the state, and we plan on capitalizing on that as a university.
Yeah, the natural gas industry to me is something here that, and you know, if you got the right people in place, I think would be such a huge boom for the state of Louisiana. Now you're in a spot because of success, and I got told this by an old athletic director years ago, I'd much rather have a coach everybody's after than have one no one's after, because that means we ain't winning. So you in a spot today, and you have an athletic director who's got some background, certainly in coaching basketball, that now you're in the search, but with the transfer portal opening up today, it's pretty imperative that I would think that you guys are going to do this pretty quickly in hiring a successor to Will Wade.
Absolutely, Mike. We've had a plan going on for the last 2 years. Will has been a phenomenal coach, but more importantly, a better person. A lot of people don't realize that. I consider him a dear, dear friend. I mean, he flew back on the team playing with us. He could have went straight to NC State, decided he wanted to make sure and come tie up all the loose ends, do the right thing, put a bow on it, make everything perfectly fine. I talked to him 2 times today. Just an amazing human being, as well as a pretty dang good coach. We've had a succession plan in place for the last year, and we are moving on that pretty quickly, and we'll probably have an announcement before the end of the week on who will be the next coach and keep the momentum going. One thing I would say, Mike, is that we don't run from the portal. We may not necessarily agree with it, but we don't get to define the world that we're living in, right? We don't get to play a part in that. We've got to embrace it and try to win depending on what arena we're in. I mean, if we're playing football, we're not going to walk out there with a basketball outfit on or basketball. So the same thing in this case, you got to embrace the portal. It's the world we're in. So, you know, we're evaluating everybody that entered the portal today, and how do we keep the folks that are here and to build a team next year to make this same kind of exposure. Because, again, this is way more than basketball. This is way more of it than football. This is about using our core competencies in South Louisiana, which is experiences, right? We love to be around people. We love crawfish balls. We love community. That's not the case in Chicago and Arizona and some of the other places I've been. So we use this as an idea, okay, how do we leverage this core competency to get people excited? And in South Louisiana, athletics and theater are two areas that we're investing in because it really brings the community together. So, again, it's so much more important than just what's grabbing the headline today. It's about using this to allow us to attract that marginal student. I've said it over and over that maybe in Jennings or maybe in Beaumont, Texas, that's not really thinking about McNeese. They get on this campus. We provide them an education that truly changes their lives, and their lives are changed forever. Their kids' lives are changed forever, and so on down the road. So we're looking to attract that future chemical engineer that's in the rural areas of Southwest Louisiana and bring them on our campus, attract them through the excitement of athletics and theater and some of the arts that's going on our campus, truly get them on our campus, give them a great education, get them a job, and get their life changed. I mean, that's what it's all about to us. We measure success. All of this has a very calibrated outcome, and that is placement rates of our students and starting salaries. So none of this is worth anything if it doesn't result in outcomes of placement rates and starting salaries. And that's the way we think about it.
Wade, I'm going to get you back on. We can talk a lot more about the economic impact and what sports does to a school. And also, you know, for a lot of people, even that are from the Bayou, from the River Parish area, and they might not want to stay close to home. And, you know, McNeese is a far enough ride for them that they're away from home. Maybe, you know, they want to kind of be away from everything and sort of be on their own. They got people like that. You know, it doesn't really matter.
Yep.
Man, I want to have that longer conversation with you. But, man, I want to thank you for joining us this afternoon. Wish you guys the best of luck. And, man, I was so thrilled to see at the end of that game when you ended up winning it. But then I saw you jumping around. Man, I was like, man, I'd live a long time. I didn't think I could see you have that vertical leap like that.
Yeah, I think we pulled a hammy. We might have pulled a hammy right there, but it was really exciting. Great day for our university, Mike. Just a great day for our university, and how that we realize we can use the athletic side to truly elevate the academic side of our university. So thank you so much for having us on.
Thanks so much, Wade. I appreciate it. And we'll definitely give you a call back to have you on, because I want to talk the economics side of this a little bit more. So thanks for being on with us, and a happy birthday to you. The president of McNeese State University, Wade Roos. When we come back, we'll have on with us Matt Miller from ESPN talking NFL draft right after this break. We're back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike Dettelier along with Charlie Long. While we're still trying to get in touch with Matt Miller, let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to James. James, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie. Sound like we got a bad connection with James. Let's try Jimmy and Gretna. Jimmy, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, what's up, Mike and Charlie?
What's up, Jimmy?
Hey, man.
How'd you like the tournament, man, this weekend?
Hey, man. I was expecting more Cinderellas. Of course, I'm glad McNeese got that one win and put them on the map. The trainer's making big money now.
How about
Lake
that?
Charles, Southland Conference. Speaking of Southland Conference, Nicholls State tomorrow, Mike. Nicholls State baseball is playing my number 13 in the nation, Southern Miss Golden Eagles, in Biloxi at the Shucker Stadium. So anybody down the bayou, any Southern Miss fans, go out to Biloxi tomorrow night. They're playing at the Biloxi Shuckers Stadium, a special Tuesday night neutral site baseball game. Southern Miss is now 13. We're catching up, Charlie, to LSU. And again, $1 tickets for tonight. For anybody looking for something to do, there's only a few more Pelicans games. But, yeah, Mike, Charlie, we're $1 tickets. I got to give credit again to Zion. When he has been playing the last 6-7 weeks, he's been balling out in a season that's been full of disappointment. My question to you guys is, what's the timeline on Trey Murphy's injury? Is it going to go into the beginning of next season?
That one I'm not sure of, but I did talk to an orthopedic surgeon that told me he thought there was a good chance he could be back right at the start of the upcoming season. But he said he did tell me it would be close. But, you know, him not having done the surgery and knowing, you know, every little intricacy of it, he did think that was a pretty good chance he could be back before the start of the 2025-2026 season. And, man, with Nicholls State, you know, and I was talking to Coach about this, you know, man, you talk about a clearing of the roster at Nicholls. I mean, it's almost name tag time where, you know, you got to wear the name tags for the coach to figure it all out. But, man, Southern Miss, you got to give them credit, Jimmy. They have done a fantastic job recruiting, and you in some heavy competition for baseball players. And they have made it work in really, really big time. I know Charlie keeps up with it a lot more than I do with it. But, man, you got to be impressed with what almost year in, year out, Southern Miss has been able to produce out on the baseball field. And these aren't the four- and the five-star baseball players. These are the twos and the threes. And look what they've accomplished so far. So impressed what's happened at Southern Miss. Now let's hope, with the new head football coach, he can do the same sort of thing, and I think he'll use the portal quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, the Sun Belt likes to kind of puff their chest, and, you know, raging Cajun fan right here, so I love doing it too, as kind of the fifth power conference in baseball, so to speak. And now it's kind of the Power Four because the Pac-12 is dissolved. It's every single year, there's always a team or two that are kind of in the back end of the top 25. This year, it's been Troy. Troy's gotten off to a really hot start. My Cajuns, though, Mike, it's been rough going early on. 11-14 this year, 3-3 in Sun Belt play. So, not the start that we were hoping for. But you know, LSU will play them tomorrow in a midweek matchup. So, looking forward to that at least.
Thanks so much for the call, Jim. We really appreciate it. Let's go to Charles and Metairie. Charles, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How are y'all?
All right, Charles. How you been, bud?
Good, good. Look, I just want to bring this up. mean, you know, right now it's March Madness and everything, and, you know, watching the game's been great, and just, you know, watching other SEC teams representing the Southeastern Conference, making it to the Sweet 16, and it just, you know, it blows my mind the state of LSU men's basketball right now, where we're at. You know, it just want to get you guys, your guys' opinion, if this is more of, you know, the AD slash coaching as well, because it just seems that we have regressed with the men's program. You know, it used to be, I remember when I was younger, LSU was automatically in the March Madness every year, you know, and it was a proud program. And I think now, you know, it's like we finished second in to last place this year, you know, and it just seems like we've been going backwards, and I don't think they've been really paying much attention to the men's basketball program. And I think I read today like two or three guys already hitting the transfer portal. It just seems like it's been very toxic of late and very disappointing, I think, for the fan base and the program. You know, it used to be a relevant program. Now it's, you know, you see these other schools, Alabama, Auburn, you know, they, Ole Miss, you know, not only is it a football school, but, you know, their men's basketball program is consistently every season, you know, in the tournament and, you know, going deep in the tournament.
Yeah, Charles, listen, I'm with you on that. You know, and I know Matt pretty well, and but this is on a slippery slope here. And you see what happened at Ole Miss. Chris Beard takes that over, and you, whatever you want to think about him,
he can coach
away from the basketball court, that dude has turned that program around. And you see the powerhouses built now at an Auburn, at Alabama, to Tennessee, Florida. And you're like, whoa, why isn't it happening here? They've you know, now the talk is, well, we're going to filter more portal money or NIL money to the men's basketball. What did it take this to have it figured out? Come on, you were doing it in baseball. You're doing it in football. You do it in women's basketball, but you're not doing it in men's basketball? I don't get that. And I'm 100% agreement with you. You know, sort of remembering the 70s and what Dale Brown was able to build there, and we've seen it kind of hit the highs and lows. But, man, this has taken a real slippery slide for LSU's men basketball. And you can sugarcoat it all you want. Bottom line is Matt McMahon has not done a good job as head coach of the LSU basketball team. No matter how you cut it, say, oh, well, when Will Wade left the team, you know, how more than most guys left. Okay, that happens everywhere when a coach leaves. That's not an excuse anymore. And I see some of them using it for LSU football, the exact same way. But Matt's got 1 year to get this straight, and he better get it right in the portal. That's all I can say. If not, you'll be starting all new again, and when you change coaches, you change a big part of your roster.
But look at a couple programs in the SEC. You already mentioned Chris Beard with Ole Miss, Mike, but, I mean, Mark Pope goes to Kentucky. He's got them in the Sweet 16 year one. John Calipari leaves Kentucky, goes to Arkansas. It's like a win-win for both programs. They're both in the Sweet 16. As to Charles, to your point, 14 of the 16 SEC teams made the NCAA tournament field of 68. The only teams that didn't were South Carolina and LSU. I know Texas lost in the first four, so they didn't technically get into the field of 64.
And what happened to that coach?
Terry Rodney gets fired.
Bang.
But as far as McMahon goes, look, year one, they called it like a year zero. That's fine. Whatever. A lot of turnover. You're not expecting great things in that first year with Coach McMahon. Year two, they made that step, right? And you get up to 9-9 in SEC play. And you're feeling pretty good entering year three. It felt kind of like a make or break year for Coach McMahon this year. And it just, talk about a free fall. It just didn't work.
When if he wouldn't have been hired by Scott Woodard, he wouldn't be employed today. I'm just telling you the truth.
I don't disagree. And so now you're looking at this LSU basketball program. They're sticking with Coach McMahon. They think that basically throwing more money at it will solve it. I need to see it to believe it, Mike. Because you're seeing some of these coaches have great success early on in their 10 years with these SEC programs. The SEC's a gauntlet now. whatever our coworker likes to say about how quote-unquote overrated they are, they have seven teams in the Sweet 16. Seven. I mean, it's a huge leap from where SEC basketball was a couple years ago. It used to be like the ACC was the powerhouse. Now it's shifted. It's shifted towards the SEC.
Charlie,
so you have to figure out a way to get in that number.
Aren't we seeing this? Kim Mulkey brought this up to me when I talked to her about women's basketball in the Southeast Conference, and she was like, Mike, just take a look at it. How the shift has went from west, east, to the south. If it's football, if it's baseball, if it's basketball, men and women.
Mike, for me growing
she's
up
right.
In the NCAA tournament, I kind of grew up with like UNC and Duke and Virginia, right? And like these traditional powers, NC State would kind of throw their hat in the ring sometimes. Out of the ACC was like the controlling force. This year, when you look at the 2-1 seeds in Auburn and Florida that are already in the Sweet 16 looking for deeper runs, you're looking at the 2-2 seeds in Alabama and Tennessee already in the Sweet 16, a 10 seed with Coach Calipari in Arkansas making the Sweet 16. What Coach McMahon needs to do is to get in the number. And I don't know if he can, really, if I'm being honest with you, just because it's so tough in the SEC right now.
And to turn it in 1 year, Charlie, it ain't going to happen. I'm telling you.
But that's what I'm saying. It's just like all of it's now going to be on year four. You've put all your chips into the center of the table. You made the step in year two. You took a big step backwards. And now you're hoping that you can take a major leap forwards in year four? I just don't know, Mike.
I agree with you totally. We'll be back to finish it up here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870 right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTellier along with Charlie Long. Want to tell everybody that at 5:40, we didn't get a chance to talk a lot about it, but I know, Charlie, you and I talked about this Wednesday. Man, Texas has got a damn good team, and they are well coached. And, man, after the first game I was, man, did I maybe misread that? I didn't. LSU helped, too. Their pitching was El Lausio, and their fielding was every bit as bad in games 2 and 3 against the Longhorns.
It's really kind of the worst possible timing. Now, I will say this. Them cratering from number 2 to number 8 in
that's
D1
a big
baseball's
drop.
Poll. That feels kind of insulting, in all honesty. Look, I know they didn't play their best series, but losing 2 of 3 in Austin against a top-10 opponent, that's kind of harsh.
And it's early in the season, yeah. So don't overreact. We'll be back with more Sports Talk right after this news break on the Big 870.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike DeTellier along with Charlie Long. Steve Geller will join us right toward the end of our 5 o'clock hour. Want to tell everybody at 5:20, Zach Nagy, publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated, will join us to talk about commitments for LSU, which I mean, today I don't know how far you can go with that. And also the latest on LSU's spring drills in football. And at 5:40, Scott Sanders, former Major League Baseball pitcher, Nicholls State Colonel, star pitcher, and pitched in the majors, I think 9 years, is on with us. He covers LSU for us and does a great job covering the Tiger baseball team. Dropped 2 of 3 against a really good Texas Longhorn team. We've had some texts asking me about exactly where Dylan Radins will play for the Saints. Now, he's played across the board for the Titans in the time he's been there. He's played left tackle, left guard, right tackle, and he's played more right guard and right tackle than any other spot. And last year, exclusively, he was a right guard for the Titans. But I think they're going to put him on the left side. And I think he's going to battle Nick Saldiveri there. I know the prior regime and their offensive line coaches, along with people in the front office still today, still think a lot of Nick Saldiveri. So I think that battle here. Now, Saldiveri's got to prove he can stay healthy because him and Kendra Miller, it's not that they don't have talent, but, you know, come on, you got to be on the field to actually show it. And both of them have really struggled in their inability to see any really significant playing time. So to answer the question, I think you're going to see Dylan Radins be the left guard or given that opportunity to win that left guard spot. And I don't think this team has given up on Nick Saldiveri. I think they're going to give it a shot. But again, with Nick, I can't tell you if he's a good player or not. He just hasn't been on the field much for him to prove if he is or he isn't. Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to James. James, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, guys, I was charging my phone when I heard you guys talking. But listen, I think we got to give the head coach a shot and really do what he needs to do is in terms of getting a quarterback. I mean, look at the guy in Indianapolis. He still hasn't picked his own quarterback. He's got to get a guy that fits his system. He may not fit Sean's system. He may not fit, you know, whoever's system. But he's a guy to fit his system. And I think that supersedes whether he, you know, because, listen, we're talking Jackson Dart, you know, but if he doesn't go nine, he's definitely going to Pittsburgh at 21 or whatever it is. Then you got the guy from, Indiana? I like him. I don't hear guys mention him that much, but he's kind of old. He's like 25, right?
Curtis Rourke from Indiana?
Yeah, Tyler. No, I think he's talking about the Louisville quarterback.
Oh, Tyler Shaw?
Yeah. I think Tyler may go a lot higher than people think he'll go. I don't think he'll go in round one.
No.
But I think think he'll go in the second round. If you don't figure out the quarterback situation, James, you know it as well as I do. If you don't figure that out, you bailing water at this stage. You're just bailing water. And, man, it would take you a hell of a deal to jump from 9 to 1 to get Cam Ward. Hey, I can say I like him, but can I come up with a deal to make it work at that spot? And if you look at the Titans on how they built, they got a head coach that's on the thinnest of ice with a new GM and an owner that she don't want to hear no excuses. One thing with Miss Amy, she is determined to get that situation straightened out because they have a new multi-billion dollar stadium. They are trying to make sure it gets filled, and that means suites and seats. And the NFL's great, okay, when you're winning. But sometimes when you're losing, it's difficult to sell that unless you got a top quarterback, and they don't have it. But she was told Will Levis is the answer by the prior regime. That's why they're not there anymore. It will take a heck of a deal, but I agree with you. Until the Saints figure this out at quarterback, you just kind of swirling around in that football purgatory range. So I agree with you that the coach is going to have to be given some slack here because of the fact he didn't walk into a situation like what Jim Harbaugh walked into in L.A. He didn't have the guy there.
And I know we talked about this in the first hour as well, Mike, but it's kind of hard to envision that reality where the Saints do trade up from 9 to 1. You're going to deplete all of your future assets, really, to do it. What do you think the price tag is? Like, let's talk about this. I remember the Bears did it, obviously, a couple years ago, trading back from number one overall with the Panthers, right? The Panthers had to give up their first-round pick that year, their first-round pick the year following, which ended up being the number one overall pick, funny enough. That's how the Bears get Caleb Williams. And then they had to give up extra
A second and a third.
So you're talking about if you move back or if you move up from pick 9 to pick 1 to go out and get Cam Ward, I think they could sell that, right? Just based off the fact that, Kellen Moore loves this guy. He sees him as the quarterback of the future. They definitely could sell it. But the question is it worth the price tag to do so?
Okay,
I'm not sure.
Here's my deal, too. If you're picking the guy with the first overall pick in the draft, he ain't watching.
That's
true
as well.
He's playing. And you made the decision, not say Kellen Moore, but management did, to give a veteran quarterback $40 million a year this year. But I'm going to tell you, whoever picks Cam Ward, they're going to be sitting and watching. Cam Ward's playing year one and first game in year one, unless he's injured.
And I think he's the most pro-ready of any of these guys. We've talked about this class, Mike. It's developmental. Quinn Ewers, like Jalen Milroe, if you can throw these guys out day one, they're not going to be successful. Cam Ward, I think of anyone in this class, including Shedeur Sanders, including Jackson Dart, including Tyler Shaw, all these other guys, right? He's the one that you can throw out day one and feel pretty good about.
He's the most talented.
Yeah.
I can tell you that. You watch him throw a football, and Charlie, it's unreal. When you break down the film on him, he does not really set up, and with that over-the-top delivery, man, it's our arm talent. And it shocks me. he really doesn't set to throw a ball much. Now, first thing a quarterback coach is going to do is he's going to work with him on in setting his feet, throwing, you know, on balance and delivery. It's remarkable to watch him throw a football. And when you watch him play at Miami of Florida, most of that, he's just throwing, standing straight up, throwing it with his arm.
So, Mike, I think, and once again, the Bryce Young trade is the most, you know,
it's the most recent, and that's what you would go
by. And it's the closest because you're making the jump from 9 to 1, including the quarterback tax and whatever. The Panthers got the number one overall pick in 2023. They traded DJ Moore, their top wide receiver. They traded a 2023 first-round pick, which is the 9th overall, as I mentioned, moving up from 9 to 1. They traded their 2023 second-round pick, number 61 overall that year. 2024 first-round pick, which ended up being the number one overall selection, Caleb Williams, once again, that's how they got him, and a 2025 second-round pick. Two firsts, two seconds, and a stud receiver just to move up 8 spots in the draft. That's probably what you'd have to do.
It's going to be the exact same thing. That's what, you know, if I'm the Titans, that's what I want from you. I mean, you can cut it all kind of different ways.
There's like precedence. That's kind of what I'm trying to explain to people.
Yeah, like, exactly.
It's happened before, but it's just the price tag is astronomical when you look at that type of value just to move up 8 selections in the draft.
And so you can like him and think he's your next star quarterback. And if you think that way, you may be willing to do it. You might be willing to do it, Charlie. I'm just telling you, I've seen it crazier things. I saw the Ricky Williams trade, too.
Yeah, that's true.
I was right there when it happened. And so, listen, when teams get it in their head that they want a certain player, they're willing to do it. But from a standpoint of you just made the decision that you're going to give, you know, your veteran quarterback $40 million a year. Well, if he's on the roster, and I couldn't believe that there's no way he would be on this roster if you're going to make that deal for Cam Ward. That you're not keeping him on this football team. You would have to ship him off after June 1st. But you've made a big commitment. You made a huge commitment to a football player, and that's why the Panthers are going to give Bryce Young every opportunity not to make it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Mike, we had mentioned the bad financial decision, really, with the Saints committing to Derek Carr for this upcoming season.
I don't get it, but whatever.
I mean, you were the first kind of pushing it that if he's not your guy, if he's not your quarterback of the future, which he's not, then move on. Cut your losses. It hasn't worked. But the Saints have decided not to do that, so now at this point, look, I get the dreams of trading up to number one for Cam, but that's the price tag that I mentioned. And at the same time, you have a big, you know, $50 million quarterback sitting. So it's tough.
Oh, he's going to be on another team. One of the two. When we come back, we'll have on with the Zach Nagy, publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated, talking about LSU spring workouts and a couple commitments going to LSU over the last few days for the Tiger football team for 2026. Right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike DeTillia along with Charlie Long running things behind the scenes here. We're on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line, the publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated, Zach Nagy. Zach, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Of course, man. I appreciate it. It's always fun talking ball with you guys. Looking forward to a little LSU football.
How about that? Over the weekend, let's talk, I don't know what commitments are today, to be honest with you. I told this to Charlie, they ain't worth the piece of paper. It's written on them commitments. And until they sign, you never really know. But Jabari Mack, I got to see him play. You know, he plays at Destrehan, which is right up the road from where I live. And, man, he was on a group. They had Phillip Wright on that team, who's also headed to LSU. And at one time, Zach, Chehaze Thomas, who's an LSU player today, he started out as a receiver, and then they moved him to the secondary. Man, they got some talent at that wide receiver position at Destrehan. But Jabari becomes the fourth wide receiver commitment for the 2026 class. And when you look at the numbers, this is a team not only from high school talent, but they're going to be real active in the portal come 2026 for receivers, just because the numbers aren't going to be there, and they're going to lose a lot after that 2025 season.
Absolutely, Mike, and that's spot on. And going out and getting Jabari Mack is as impressive as it gets, the top-ranked receiver in Louisiana. Kind of keeps that pipeline from LSU to Destrehan alive, of course. Phillip Wright's on his way to LSU. Jace Thomas, of course, on the defensive side of the ball. But getting Jabari Mack into this class is big time to keep that kind of Louisiana culture. We know that there's a history at the receiver position in the Bayou State. So to get another guy to come to LSU and kind of keep that pipeline going is big time. And, of course, he wasn't the only big-time wide receiver to commit to LSU this week, and that kind of segues into Tristan Keyes, the number one wide receiver in America, verbally committing to LSU this week. And it's about as big as it gets, Mike. This is one guy that has just kind of that quote-unquote generational talent written all over him. 6'3", 6'4", with cleats on, 185, 190, still continuing to fill out his frame. And so you add both of those guys this week in Tristan Keyes and Jabari Mack, pair them next to Jakai Anderson and Kenny Darby, who are both wide receivers currently committed to LSU. And that gives you four guys so far in that 2026 recruiting class that are kind of that cream of the crop caliber players. So Brian Kelly and this recruiting staff are doing some big time work at the receiver position. And like you said, it's a lot of mouths to feed. You could see them in 2026 have to dive into the portal because not everybody's going to get fed.
Absolutely. And then you get Dylan Purdo, who's played corner, but when watching him, I'll be honest with you, Zach, he looks to me to be more of a free safety nickel guy at corner. And I don't know what their thoughts on him down the road is, but one thing is he's aggressive in run support. Now, he's a good cover guy, but one thing that's noticeable when you watch him on the tape part of it, man, he comes up that seam fast to help out in run support. That sort of always tells me that's a little bit more about maybe he's the free safety nickel guy for LSU, and we'll find out a little bit more kind of where they project him once they get him on campus.
Absolutely, and Dylan Purdo is a guy who, in my opinion, is a Swiss Army knife in the defensive backfield, like you alluded to there. They could like him as a safety once he gets to campus just because of his size and speed, like you hit on right there. We know Blake Baker likes to drop in nickel packages, so that could be where Dylan Purdo kind of finds his bread and butter at the next level. Right now, he's listed as a cornerback, of course, but I think once the wheels start turning and he gets his way to Baton Rouge in the next couple of months to a year, I think this is a guy who could be playing safety for the Tigers in the future, and he adds to an embarrassment of riches for LSU right now in that 2026 recruiting class. And when you're hot, right? And that's exactly what Brian Kelly and the Tigers staff are right now, going out and adding Purdo to this class.
And since the spring started, tell me something that's been the biggest surprise and maybe the biggest disappointment for you so far. And I know it's early, but the biggest surprise for this LSU Tiger team, and we know they're rebuilding up front along the offensive line, and maybe a comment about Josh Thompson coming in from Northwestern, but maybe the biggest surprise, maybe biggest disappointment.
Yeah, the biggest surprise for me, Mike, is this edge rusher's room. I mean, I knew that this group was going to be elite. I think a lot of people knew that they were going to have some talent, let me say. I didn't know that they would be elite. And you're looking at Jack Pyburn, the Florida transfer, who is sensational. A full 6'5", 255. He looks the part out there, and they've been flipping him around a little bit, inside, outside. Another guy who could be used as a Swiss Army knife in the trenches for this team. And then you look at Patrick Payton, who's that kind of crown jewel in the transfer portal class in the winter window, and he looks the part out there too. So those are two guys who are going to make immediate impact through the portal, and then you can continue to fill out the rest of that two-deep depth chart with guys like Gabriel Relaford, who's a returnee from last season, who has just tremendous, tremendous expectations coming into this year. Brian Kelly, players, other staffers, everybody continues raving about Gabriel Relaford, so I think he's going to be important to keep tabs on there. And then kind of the final piece to that two-deep depth chart is going to be Jamari Butler, the Nebraska transfer. And this guy is starting to turn heads, show flashes, and it's going to take a little bit of time for him to put it together in SEC play. But I think, nonetheless, he fills out that four-deep depth chart really, really well for the edge rusher room. So that's a spot that's really, really surprised me just because of the technique. Kevin Peoples is getting them right, the depth, et cetera. Loving what I've seen from that edge rusher's room. And then when I'm looking at a quote-unquote disappointment, I'd have to look at the safety position for right now, and I don't think disappointment's the right word there. I think it was always going to take some time for them to adapt and kind of hit their stride. But when you're comparing them to the cornerback room that has so much talent like DJ Pickett, of course, Mansoor Delane, Ashton Stamps, PJ Woodland, et cetera, it's always going to make that safety room look a little thin and that competition level be a little bit weaker. So for me, the safety room is a spot that's going to continue to need some work. You're working with Tamarcus Cooley, Javian Toviano, Joel Rogers, and Deshaun Spears in that room right now. I'd love to see them go out and get another body through the portal, but that's the spot right now that I think needs some work over the next couple of months.
Josh Thompson.
Man, one word for me when it comes to Josh Thompson is a Swiss Army knife again. It's the third time I've said it, and it speaks to the versatility on this team. But Josh Thompson's a guy who's going to come in and play guard for this team, is my assumption. They have him as the second-team right tackle for now. I think that's a placeholder. I think moving forward, this is a guy who's going to slide inside, give you some versatility in the run game. Love what he provides this team, and him getting on campus is big, big for this team moving forward.
Zach, it feels like every time we're talking to LSU reporters about the spring, the same name keeps popping up, and that's Bower Sharp, the Oklahoma transfer. And what have you seen from him so far in the spring practice sessions and, you know, kind of his projection for this upcoming season with that tight end room with Tre'Dez Green? I know that Brian Kelly just gushed about him and the leadership that he provides, especially on the offense, but also the tight end room and how he can play with Green, who's entering his sophomore year in 2025. Your thoughts on Bower Sharp and what he's been doing so far?
Absolutely. And Charlie, I think that's a great question. When you look at a guy like Bower Sharp, he brings tremendous experience. Of course, he started his career out at Southeastern as a quarterback, moved to tight end, made his way to Oklahoma, where he led the team in receptions and receiving yards in 2024. And fast forward to what he's doing during spring camp, and he's turning heads at a rapid pace. He can catch the ball. He can put his hands in the dirt. He's the epitome of a complete tight end in the SEC. And I think all he does is going to really allow Tre'Dez Green to get better and better. The saying iron sharpens iron is key here. We all know that Tre'Dez Green is a guy who can kind of just show flashes of athleticism, versatility, and just show that quote-unquote freakish athleticism. But Bower Sharp is complete. He makes the plays when you need him. He's timely. He's very vocal. We had the chance to talk to him last week, and we really got to get a sense of the type of player that he is. And he's all ball. He just wants to play football. And you're going to see him a lot in 2025. I'm excited to see the outlook for Bower Sharp, of course, this upcoming season.
Wes Weeks, I mean, we've seen enough of Whit. We know what type of player he is. And so I don't want to compare him to his brother. That's because sometimes, you know, the brotherly competition, and you can just hear it between the both of them, they got it already. And they're used to stoke the fire. But what you've seen from Wes in the spring?
Yeah, Mike, I think it's a good question. I don't think the linebacker room's getting enough talk, obviously, because Whit Weeks is out right now rehabbing that ankle injury. Harold Perkins, of course, shaking back from that torn ACL in 2024. So the second level of defense, you haven't necessarily gotten a lot of attention or praise. But for me, Wes Weeks is a guy who can step in and make the plays when need be. He's a consistent force. He's not a guy who's going to come out and showcase freakish athleticism or just all these big-time highlight reel plays. He's a consistent piece, and he'll do all the right things. And it's exciting to watch him get his chance to really make a name for himself right now. We know what Whit does. But when it comes to Wes, obviously he's that vocal kind of guy who they can utilize moving into the rest of spring camp. And next to him has been Devon Keyes. And he's going to be an interesting piece to watch, Mike. I've had the chance to kind of just sit down and watch his movements and watch his technique. And he's a unique player. He showed flashes in 2024 as a true freshman, but now he's really been thrust into the mix here, where he can take big-time reps during spring camp. And I think you could see him continue taking steps in the right direction. It's going to be fun to watch Blake Baker work with him over the next couple of months because he's going to take a big-time role for this team in 2025. So I'm excited to see how the linebacker room works out. But Wes Weeks, certainly a guy who's intriguing to watch, fun player, really getting some big-time reps. And next to him, Devon Keyes is going to be another player to keep tabs on.
I want to see Devon put a little bit of weight on. You know, that's something, you know, I wouldn't tell myself, but I would tell him. Because, you know, I take a good look at him. If I'm going to run the football, I'm going to run it right at him. So he's got to learn how to get away from big men. He got to learn how to get away from heavy traffic.
No doubt. And I think that's just it comes with the territory of being a youngster right now. And moving forward, getting in the weight room is going to be key for that entire second level,
yep,
whether it's Tylan Singleton, et cetera. I mean, you have guys in that room who need to put on size to compete in the SEC, and you're spot on right there. Devon Keyes is another player. He needs to put on an additional 10, 15, 20 pounds. He's a true force in the run game at the second level of defense. Really excited to watch him kind of evolve over these next couple of months when they get into summer workouts as well. I think there's a ceiling on him that can be intriguing to watch over the next couple of months.
Zach, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always love having you on. Give great insights, and we appreciate your time, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks, Zach.
Thank you so much, you guys. Y'all have a good one.
All righty. Zach Nagy does a great job. Publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated. When we come back, former Major League Baseball pitcher, and man, he covers the Tigers for us. Does a great job. Scott Sanders, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettea along with Charlie Long, and on our Oakwood Heart Jewelers talking text line, former Major League Baseball pitcher and also does a great job covering the LSU Tigers, Scott Sanders. Scott, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Hey, listen, man, I can't believe this. In an hour and a half, it's been me, Wade Roos from Golden Meta, and you from Thibodeau. Now, the only other Cajun that hasn't been on, and he's hiding from me too, is Bobby.
That's it. Life is good. You got some Bayou Boys on.
How about that? Scott, rough series this weekend against the Longhorns. Man, after the first game, Charlie and I talked about this Wednesday that, you know, Texas, they so well coach, and they got talent. They got talent on that Longhorn team. And you know, watching the first game, and, you know, you end up winning 8-2, and then you saw this myriad of errors in the field. The pitching, man, it all was down a slippery slope, Scott, that Saturday and Sunday game.
Yeah, you know, I tell you, the one really bright spot, obviously, was Cade Anderson.
Yes.
I knew the kid was good, but, man, he went out there and he looked like a Friday night SEC starter. You know what I mean? Had the game under control. You know, the one thing I think, looking back on the weekend, I would think the only thing Jay could really probably kick himself for is, you know, he brought in Zach Cowan, and, you know, he threw the last three innings of that game in a 6-2 game, and ended up being 8-2, you know, and I'm sure looking back, he probably was thinking, like, man, what if I would have came in with a few other guys, kind of, you know, with like Benj or, you know, somebody like that, you know, to just brace that game and keep Cowan to back up Ironson on Saturday. But hey, baseball is a fickle sport. You know, it's always easy on Monday to look back and be a Monday morning quarterback. But tell you what, you know, Texas didn't back down on Saturday. You know, they came out, won the hard fought game. And one thing about baseball, you win Friday night, but anytime you have that tough game on Saturday, like they did, where, you know, it was 6-7-6 and, you know, and just back and forth, that team that wins that game on Saturday always has momentum going into Sunday. And then obviously Texas starter on Sunday just went out and dominated, best start of his career, probably best start of his life. And that's baseball, you know, and hey, Tigers got to put that behind them because, hey, they play ULL tomorrow, and they better get their stuff together tomorrow, because if not, ULL will hang another L on them if they don't look out.
We saw it last year, and it happened when they played Nicholls. Remember that one? They played Nicholls State and lost that game. But, you know, you've talked to me so much about baseball is such a fickle sport, and especially early in the season, and now you're entering SEC play that, hey, it ain't no homecoming games no more. I mean, these guys, man, they can flat out play every team in the SEC. And you caught early with Missouri. Well, most people thought it was maybe the bottom rung of the ladder in the SEC, but every series, Scott, you brought it up, just how tough the SEC is.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and going back on Texas, I mean, Texas, you know, coming into that series, some people were down on them, obviously. But I tell you what, they obviously they had home. It was their first SEC, you know, weekend ever. So obviously that made it even a little bit more special. But, hey, they fought. You know, they had some good pitching. They had timely hitting. And, you know, he just did what they had to do. But that going forward, that's every week going forward in the SEC, you know, for the next umpteen weekends in a row. Like, you know, Mississippi State coming this weekend, you know, it's still Mississippi State. You know, they're not Mississippi State back in the glory days, Will Clark and Rafael Palmeiro, but they're still Mississippi State. I mean, you have to go out, you know, and basically put it on the line again. Now, one good thing, you're at home. You know, you're going to have the Tiger fans, best fans in the land behind you. But the SEC is a gauntlet, man. It doesn't let up.
You know, the good thing is, though, Scott, I feel like people are maybe a little bit overreacting to the series. Like, yes, you play at OU and at Auburn, who are both in the top 15 right now. But as far as, you know, the toughest weekend series on the road in SEC play, you just saw it. I mean, against Texas. And this is going to be a top 10 team all year long. And I don't even know if we undersold it, but just how good Jim Schlossnagel is. He has won every single place he's been.
That dude can manage.
And absolutely. And shockingly enough, he's off to a great start with UT. And so Just looking back at the weekend, though, Scott, you mentioned Cade Anderson as a bright spot. I think you saw a couple other ones, too. Zach Cowan, I mean, what else can you say about the guy? The ace from Wofford comes in. He's a bullpen pitcher for LSU. Jay's called him the MVP of the team at points, you know, just for how important he's been in high-leverage moments. And full display how good he is on the mound, too, just following up Cade Anderson in that Friday night win and just shutting down that Texas offense.
Yeah, so Zach is what I would call, he is a pitcher. He throws everything that you're not looking for at the right count. He throws a fastball when you're looking changeup. He throws a changeup when you're looking fastball. He throws a breaking ball. He pitches backwards a lot. Obviously, Nate Yeske is the one calling the pitches, so you have to give a big shout out to him as well. But it takes Zach Cowan to deliver the pitches. You know, but he's a guy that, you know, when you look at him, like, doesn't blow you off, you know, his fastball solid, you know, 90, 91, 92, sometimes 88, 89. He might pop a 93, but it's that changeup. You know, we call it a Bugs Bunny changeup in baseball. He's got that changeup that it looks like a fastball, and guys, they commit to it, and it just never gets there, you know what I mean? And to me, it's probably one – and back on Cade Anderson, for the first time I really saw as a pitcher, used his changeup this past weekend, and I love to see it because, to me, it put him on another level as well, you know. But Zach has been incredible. Like I said, I'm really hoping they can find a way to win on Friday nights without him, so they can back up either Shores or Ianson with Cowan, because I think that's the recipe to taking two out of three from a lot of SEC teams. Worst case scenario, two out of three.
Yeah, hindsight's 20/20, Scott, and I think a lot of people will say, oh, Cason Evans should have been used on that Saturday game. And yeah, probably so. If you had asked Jay if he would do that over, maybe that would be the case, because LSU's bullpen was really, really struggling in that Saturday matchup. But you kind of get the lead with Curiel's big hit, and then all of a sudden you're feeling pretty good about yourself, and then things kind of crumble a little bit. But Cason Evans was another one of those highlights. It feels like you're starting to see some of the main pieces emerge on the mound for this LSU team. We already talked about Cade, we talked about Zach, and now also Cason, who was kind of the de facto closer at times early on in the season, but he goes out in extended relief innings on Sunday and performs very, very well against a good Texas team.
Yeah, he did. Cason really pitched well. Unfortunately, when he got into the game, basically it was pretty much over. You know, and one thing, when I coached a lot of baseball, high school and travel baseball, and the one thing I always try to do is I always try to make sure my dominant arms were in games that meant something. And I know Jay had a game plan, and he ended up having to use him on Sunday because he didn't want to go a weekend without getting him some work. You know, because he's probably not going to pitch against ULL here on Tuesday. But like, that's one thing. You know, obviously, Cason's been out there and been very, very impressive. He comes after guys. He's got 28 strikeouts in 16 innings. You know what I mean? With the five walks. I mean, that's pretty much going to dominate. You know, only giving up 11 hits. So I mean, he's giving up basically one base runner per inning. So when you're going to give up one base runner per inning, you're gonna have a lot of success in baseball. So he's a guy, though. I mean, he's got his spot in the pen, and hopefully this weekend we can get him in a game where he can get one of those saves.
In the first game, Scott, I thought about you when Luis Hernandez came up with some timely hits there. And a couple of weeks back, I asked you, give me a name, and you were quick with Hernandez at the catching spot.
Yeah, I was really glad to see him, too, because, you know, he got up to a little rough start. Obviously, the guy hit, I don't know, 20-some home runs last year or whatever at Indiana State. So, I mean, obviously the guy can hit, you know, but I was really glad to see him get it going, getting some big hits, pop one over the fence, those type of things. Just him behind the plate has really surprised me, because supposedly he wasn't a defensive catcher, but he's done a great job with the pitching staff. But I've actually got to meet him a couple of times out of the field, and he's a really, really good kid from Puerto Rico, and he's one of my favorites.
Scott, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Man, always enjoy your insights. And I say, like you, you better get ready, because that Raging Cajun team, which has had a rocky road this year, they may be a tough out.
Yeah, well, it's coming to Alex Box. Every time you come to Alex Box, it's kind of like your World Series sometimes, even if you're ULL or Nichols or Southeastern or whoever it is. You know what I mean? If you go there, you win that game, it makes your season a lot nicer. So.
Scott, thanks so much for joining us, bud. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Scott.
Have a great evening.
All righty. Thank you. Scott Sanders, former Major League Baseball pitcher, former Nichols State Colonel, gives us great coverage here on the Big 870 on the LSU baseball team. We'll be back to finish it up here in hour number two, right after this break. Finishing up here on Hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike D'Tea along with Charlie Long. Got the score 50-49 LSU over Florida State at the half. Want to tell everybody that at 6:30 tonight, it'll be Pelicans pregame as they play the 76ers. And at 7 o'clock, tip-off. You can hear it right here on the Big 870 WWL. Pelicans and Philadelphia 76ers with Graf on the call. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break.
Welcome on into the start of a work week, folks. It is Monday, March 24th. Steve Geller with Charlie Long bringing you to 6:30 this evening. That's when we got some Pelicans basketball. The Birds are back home in the Smoothie King Center. They are taking on the Philadelphia 76ers this evening. 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock tip-off on the Big 870 AM and 105.3 FM. Keeping an eye on the LSU ladies in action right now. Tigers up 58-51. We're in the third quarter of that matchup in the PMAC. The winner moving on to the Sweet 16, and boy, this one has been back and forth. At one point early on, I saw the Tigers were up 10, and I was like, all right, here come the Bayou Bengals cruising. Florida State fought all the way back, and at one point in the second quarter, were up by one, but the Tigers right now have that seven-point lead. We'll be keeping you updated throughout the rest of this show as we gear up for Pelicans basketball, like I said, starting up tonight at 6:30 on WWL. A big one today was the introduction of Brandon Cooks, reintroduction, I should say, of Brandon Cooks. The 2014 first-round pick of the Black and Gold is back in New Orleans, inking a two-year deal to join Kellen Moore's offense. We'll be excited to see what he has left in the tank and what he can do for this Black and Gold bunch now with Chris Olave, Rashid Shaheed, and you'd imagine that I would say Cooks is that third option now with this squad, and they still need that big physical wide receiver in this lineup, though, and we'll be interested to see if maybe they can find, I don't know, free agency or in the draft.
Third option for now. We'll see what they do, because as you mentioned, it's got a lot of speed. You and Jeff talked about this on Friday. You know, not a lot of size, not a lot of physicality, and you still have question marks in the wide receiver room right now.
Sure.
Which is why a lot of mocks are saying, oh, Tet McMillan to the Saints at pick 9 makes a lot of sense. That's if he'll be there, though. I'm really kind of not sure. A couple teams in front of the Saints could potentially take Tet.
It's been hit or miss in those simulated mocks I've done if he is or isn't there. There's times he is.
A couple of those teams, though, Steve, like the Patriots at pick 4 seem like the potential ceiling for him, and that's if they, I mean,
yeah,
depending on what happens in the top 3 picks as well and how it shapes up, because if Travis Hunter or obviously Abdul Carter are there, the Patriots would likely pick either one of those players over someone like Tet McMillan, but who knows? You know, I think the Jags are okay in their wide receiver room. Brian Thomas Jr. had a breakout rookie campaign. He was fantastic for him just this past season. But at 6, you have the Raiders, who are kind of missing that true wide receiver 1. Jacoby Myers is a good wide receiver 2. They could potentially draft Tet. I know that they've been tied very often to, you know, Ashton Jeanty in the running back at pick 6, but we'll see what happens there. At pick 7, you know, maybe the Jets could take a look at Tet McMillan. They kind of need pass catcher. They've really been tied with Tyler Warren. I've been seeing a lot of mocks that have the Penn State tight end going to them at pick 7. And then at pick 8, I mean, the Carolina Panthers. I remember we interviewed Des Johnson from the Believe in Panthers podcast, Steve, a couple weeks back about free agency and how it was going in the NFC South. And Des said with all the money that the Panthers spent on defense, it kind of opened up their options a little bit with the 8th overall pick that they didn't need to go defense. Now, their biggest need is probably still pass rusher. Going with an edge at pick 8 would make a lot of sense. But if they decide not to do it, getting a big X receiver for Bryce Young to help his development further would make sense to me. So, yes, Tet McMillan to the Saints at pick 9 would be awesome. And it fills a giant hole in that wide receiver room, something that they don't have right now. But at the same time, a lot of these teams above them could also potentially add or use a true X receiver, so to speak. So we'll see if he's there.
You know, meetings don't mean much. There's always meetings going on, but it was interesting today. Of course, everyone jumps on it. Albert Breer of Monday Morning Quarterback put out there that the Saints were meeting tonight with the quarterback from Texas, Quinn Ewers. But, you know, like I said, meetings happen all the time in the NFL. Doesn't really mean a whole ton.
I think a lot more people were kind of freaking out about the fact that a lot of Saints folks were going to Miami.
Miami, right?
And so Mike and I talked a lot about that because there is precedence of moving up, and recent precedence as well, from pick 9 to pick 1. That's exactly what the Chicago Bears did when they moved back from pick 1 to allow the Carolina Panthers to draft Bryce Young with the first overall pick in 2023. And just the price is outrageous. So, yes, you know, the Saints, and I know that the Cam Ward soundbite was kind of floating around there on social media, especially Twitter, where he's just like, oh, I would love to play for the Saints and all that good stuff. But
that was a press conference in New Orleans, too.
Yes.
Just saying.
Yes. So, at the same time, the price tag it would take to move up to get Cam Ward, you better be certain that he is the guy and going to be a stud for a very long time.
We opened the show talking about Brandon Cooks. He met with the nationally local media today and will be a guest on Sports Talk tomorrow. Let's hear a little bit of what Brandon Cooks had to say as he was introduced for a second time as a member of the Black and Gold.
Brandon, I know this NFL journey can always be, you know, you can't predict things, but would you have envisioned coming back to the Saints at any point in your career?
You always, you know, keep the bridge there. You just never know, right? Especially in my career, just some of the changes. You know, you never count that out for sure.
What do you bring back to the franchise? Obviously, wiser and a more seasoned veteran, yeah, and a guy who's seen a lot of things.
Well, yeah, no, you answered that for me. Definitely seen a lot of, you know, great football, you know, for myself, just elevating my game, obviously, over the years, you know, since being here. So I look forward to, you know, from the playmaking standpoint, but also just the leadership aspect, bringing back to the locker room, not just only the receiver room, but as a team overall.
Hey, Brandon, this is like the first time in your career that you've been able to kind of choose your own destination.
Yeah.
What was that process kind of like for you?
That was fun. You know, it was for me, it was different. Obviously, usually, you know, you wake up after the season and you know where you're going to be. But to go through this process was a good learning process. It was a fun one. And I'm just glad to, you know, get it over with so I can focus on the task at hand, and that's playing football.
From a leadership aspect, being a guy that's been around for a while, coming into like a younger room, what do you feel like you can bring to these guys as you know, the vet through your perspective and journey and the things you've learned?
I just think learning, you know, through how to approach the game, you know, from my younger years to now, approaching the game in such a totally different aspect, because obviously, you know, more you got more knowledge, you got more wisdom, and then just your process on, you know, doing as best as you can, taking care of your body, the things that matter the most, you know, staying on the field. So being able to hopefully give some of that game and then also on the field as well, and just how to play with one another is going to be important.
What do you think about the situation you're stepping into here now with the Saints?
I think we've got a great room. I think you can talk about CO, like I said, she blazing. CO can, you know, can run any route and set. So I think we've got a great room from that aspect. And it seemed like a lot of guys from the outside, a lot of unselfishness, and I think that's important to start off with. Guys just want to win, obviously take care of business, and let everything else kind of handle itself.
Did I hear right that you have a previous relationship with Keith Williams?
Yeah, so Keith actually is from Stockton, California as well, obviously a lot older than me. And so he more so knew my brothers, but he's been recruiting me since I was 17 years old. You know, he's at Fresno. Keith, I'm not going to Fresno. And then got in the league and, you know, never really had the opportunity to work with each other, you know, during the season. So I look forward to that because I really do believe he's the best receiver coach in the league. Just doing what he's done with his guys and guys off the field are not necessarily on his team as well over the years.
What are your impressions of Derek?
Oh, I mean, Derek, we're same class. You know, I've known Derek for a long time from Northern California as well. He can throw any ball, tough cat, and a great leader. You talk about a guy who does so much, you know, for his team and off the field and in the community, another believer. You know, just a great human being, but also a guy that can, you know, play at the highest level and has been doing that throughout his career.
Do you have any thoughts on Kellen Moore's offense in general? Obviously, you saw the Eagles twice this year.
Yeah, I mean, he won a Super Bowl. And so, you know, you got to be doing something right. But I think just how he uses everyone. I mean, even back to, I think about when he was with the Cowboys, Chargers. He used all his pieces to their strength, not just the receivers, but the backs. He has a unique balance, you know, from his pass game and his run game. And I think we got one of the best backs in the league in AK. So I think it will be great. It's going to be great kind of getting used to that throughout April and OTAs and kind of seeing what that flow is going to be like.
Brandon, I'm sure this is probably one that falls in the, I'll reflect on that another time, but looks like
you could get to 10,000 this year. Is that a number that kind of blows your mind a little bit?
I'm blowing my mind. I really should have been there already, but you know, a few things here and there, but that'll take care of itself. I really believe that it'll be the day to, like you said, reflect on that when it's all said and done. But a lot of time before that, so not really think about that.
You heard Cooks being asked at the end there about getting to 10,000 yards receiving in his career, currently sitting at 9,532. Obviously dealt with a little bit of injuries throughout his career, missed some time, so feels he should be there already. Definitely could easily eclipse that in black and gold next year. Like I said, he's going to be a guest on Sports Talk tomorrow. Make sure you tune in with Mike Dottiglia at 4:20 on Tuesday. Brandon Cooks will stop by WWL Saints Radio. We're going to take a break as we get ready for the Pelicans hosting the Philadelphia 76ers. 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock tip-off right here on WWL. Be back with more after this. Welcome back into Sports Talk. Before we get on out of here, I want to give you an update on the LSU women's basketball team. They are putting it to the Seminoles right now. LSU up 77-55, a minute left in the third quarter for LSU to advance to the Sweet 16 tournament. Hoping the Tigers can close things out here. Florida State is actually the second scoring team in the nation, and LSU putting it to them right now. So hopefully they can keep the pedal to the metal there in the PMAC. Tomorrow, 6:30, we're going to have some LSU baseball for you. It's an in-state matchup when the Tigers take on University of Louisiana Lafayette, Raging Cajuns in Alec Box Stadium. We will join First Pitch at 6:30 right here on WWLAMFM.com and the free Odyssey app. Tomorrow on Sports Talk, like I mentioned, Brandon Cooks will be dropping by. We'll also be talking some LSU baseball with former Tiger Mikey Matuk before we get into LSU baseball taking on the Raging Cajuns. Have a great night, everyone. I'm Steve Geller for Charlie Long, telling you to have a great one and stay tuned for Pelicans basketball right after this on WWL.